podcast family, I can tell you from personal experience that true diagnostic criteria fulfilled ADHD can be a burden. It can be rough. However, the good news is that harnessed, focused, and trained ADHD can be extremely powerful as a multitasking ability if it's done correctly. Now, I mean ADHD that meets true diagnostic criteria, not being thrown around loosey-goosey, like, oh, I just can't concentrate on anything. Oh, I'm so distracted. No, majority of those are distracted by their phone and FOMO, and that's not ADHD. True diagnosed ADHD is a real issue. We're going to talk about that in this episode because there's a brand new study that came out this month, March 2024, that has given us a little bit of reassurance about patients that are taking these medications and that getting pregnant. Guys, I don't know if it's happened to you. Definitely it's happened to me where a patient comes in. It's like, I am deathly afraid of not being able to take my medication because me off medication is kind of a nightmare for myself and everybody else. And I get that. I understand what that patient is saying. So traditionally, the fear was, well, we're not going to allow this medication in pregnancy, right? I mean, it's a stimulant. It's an amphetamine-based medication. Surely, that's going to be linked to adverse issues like preeclampsia, all types of hypertensive disorders in pregnancy, potentially preterm birth. Hopefully not, but we don't know. Maybe abruption. I mean, we don't have good, solid population-level data. And so most would say, I don't know, I'm kind of uncomfortable with this. But now we have a reassuring answer that we're going to cover in this episode. This publication comes from a cohort study from Western Australia, and we're going to talk about it in this episode. All right, everybody, let's see if I can get through working this with my ADHD, and we'll get to our target destination. Here we go. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls. Have you all heard of this national organization called CHADD, C-H-A-D-D? It's a real thing. It stands for Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. It really does have a lot of information on their website. It's very good. But it reminds us that the old historic stereotype was that, oh, these are little rambunctious little boys, and they'll age out of that. Well, some of that is true. And yes, it definitely has a higher prevalence in younger aged boys. But then by around teenage years and by adulthood, that number is pretty equal, all right? So when during this time of the age where they're prepubescent, girls are diagnosed with ADHD just under half at the rate at which boys are in that same age group, okay? However, once they get into puberty and into adulthood, it's pretty evenly matched. Right now, according to the CDC, the prevalence of ADHD for adults is about 4.4%. So 4.4% of adults is a lot. Now, that's those who carry the diagnosis. Doesn't mean that all of them are on medication for it, because some choose cognitive behavioral therapy, some choose specific coping mechanisms and behavioral modifications to try to get them through that. Some self-medicate, and I don't mean by illicit things. I am one of those who self-medicates. My agent of choice is coffee. Believe it or not, coffee, because of its stimulant effect, really zones me in until I saturate my receptors throughout the day, and then it no longer works by the end of the day, usually around 7 p.m. My body's like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not listening to that anymore. And then there's a group that are on medications. Now, that's obviously what we're talking about here, okay? But not all medications here are obviously the same. Everybody remembers Ritalin. That's where it first started out. And Ritalin is very historic. Ritalin is actually methylphenidate, okay? Methylphenidate. But then there's another kind, which is dexamphetamine or dextroamphetamine. It's the same class. That's like indexedrin. So we have all of these new medications that have exploded all over the place, and we need to be aware of what they are. And when we look at publications that talk about ADHD medications, we have to know which one we're talking about, because they all have different properties. Some are short acting, some are long acting, some are stimulants, and some actually are used off label that aren't even for ADHD at all. Some people have used Wellbutrin, Bupropion, for ADHD symptoms, especially when it's not clear or there's an overlap maybe with a little bit of depression. They're used for a lot of different things, so medications can cross lanes. All right, everyone, I don't want to derail too much into this, but it does need explanation, because the publication that we're going to get into today focused specifically on dextroamphetamine, right? So dexamphetamine, that's the medication that was looked at in this new publication that came out on March the 1st, 2024, and we're going to talk about that. This came out in Archives of Women's Mental Health, and it's again, fresh off the press. And I'll give you that title here in a minute. But the specific medication that they were looking at was exposure to dexamphetamine. The whole point we're trying to make here is that not all of these medications are the same. So if somebody asks, oh, is it safe to take ADHD meds in pregnancy? Okay, we're going to explain that, because when somebody talks about is it safe, they mean three different boxes. Number one is physical changes to the child. That typically means congenital anomalies, because of exposure typically in the first trimester. So physical changes. Then there's functional changes. That's called neurodevelopmental issues. And there's data for that. We're going to touch on that in this episode. And then there's the third box regarding medication safety in pregnancy, which is perinatal outcomes. Does it increase the risk of abruption? Does it increase the risk of gestational hypertensive disorders? Does it increase the risk of preeclampsia, eclampsia, preterm birth, gestational diabetes, what have you? So all of those things, those are the three different boxes. Physical alterations to the child, that's really tricky. And we're going to talk about that a little bit here, even though that is not, I want to be very clear, that is not what this new publication looked at. This new publication looked at the last box, which was on perinatal outcomes. Overall effects of pregnancy, like gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, and the like, okay? So the three boxes of medication safety in a pregnancy are always physical effects on the child, aka anomalies, functional defects, neurodevelopmental issues, and then overall maternal and child outcomes called perinatal outcomes. So see how loaded that is? Is it safe to use ADHD medications in pregnancy? Man, which one? Which med? Because there are differences. So methylphenidate is the old Ritalin. That's also a Concerta. Then you have medications that are totally different, but still in the same class of stimulant, like Vyvanse. Vyvanse is lisdexamfetamine, which is a whole other type of medication, all within that same class of stimulant-driven medications. So Vyvanse is lisdexamfetamine. All basically work at the same level, although they're not really sure how they work. They have something to do with the brain's norepi levels and dopamine levels, which help integrate focus and decrease impulsivity. Okay, so methylphenidate, Concerta or Ritalin, and then Vyvanse, which is lisdexamfetamine, and then medications like this one that this new publication focused on, which was dexamphetamine. All right, first, right off the bat, let's clear up this distinction between ADD and ADHD. Because I love when somebody doesn't understand the terms and they go, oh, no, I don't have ADHD, I just have ADD. Hold on there, brother. Hold on. Let's get the terms right, because that's the same daggone thing. Okay. I mean, no, I don't have the hyperactivity part. Well, I understand that. I get that. But the diagnosis is not ADD. It is ADHD, even without the hyperactivity part, because it is all one spectrum. So in the past, historically, attention deficit disorder was used as a predominant diagnostic term, but that has now been replaced by attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There really is not one or the other. Now, some have different manifestations of attention deficit versus hyperactivity or vice versa, but it is one condition. That term, ADD, which is now outdated, didn't even start this whole discussion. Back in the 1960s, the American Psychiatric Association, the APA, put in the DSM this term called hyperkinetic reaction of childhood. Hyperkinetic reaction of childhood was the grandfather of what later became known in the 1980s as attention deficit disorder. And of course, now, as we've already stated, it's attention deficit hyperactivity, and that came in the late 80s to early 90s. So there's been this progressive understanding of this condition where, oh, it's just hyperkinetic reaction of childhood, whatever that was. I mean, these kids basically were labeled as having normal intelligence, but hyperactive. Then it became attention deficit disorder. And of course, now we are at ADHD. But look how much we've learned from the 1960s to now. And not only has our understanding of this condition changed, but obviously the availability of medications have also changed as well. These medications have been around a long, long time and weren't really for this condition at all. They were originally used to fight fatigue, daytime sleepiness, or even depression, like Ritalin has been out since the 1950s. These are old medications. Now, of course, we've got different varieties and different meds, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But all to say, this is not, a 1990s thing. People say, oh, this is a 90s thing, or this is just these new kids. They're all getting these terms. Well, they're getting these terms, number one, because it seems to be on the rise. Now, some of that may be misused and misapplied. That's why we got to follow the rules. But there is this progressive trend worldwide, guys. This is not just the U.S. This has been reported in Canada. It's been reported in Europe. It's been reported in Australia that who knows whether it's true FOMO, fear of missing out, or the use of technology has just rewired our brains to always be looking for the next thing. Who knows? All of those, by the way, have been proposed as theories. That we're overstimulated all the time. Therefore, this lack of attention has become a true pathological condition. But this started all the way back in the 1960s. And then with a resurgence of taking meds that were used for depression and for chronic fatigue, and even for narcolepsy, and then applied it to this condition. But yeah, you can go back to 1960s where hyperkinetic reaction of childhood was once a thing. Now that we've laid that background, let's clear up one important issue next. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. The title of the study that we're going to be summarizing today, and really that we're supposed to be focusing on, but there's just so much that we got to talk about rather than just going straight to this. But the title of this new publication that I promise I am going to get into is Investigating Maternal and Neonatal Health Outcomes Associated with Continuing or Stopping Dexamphetamine Treatment for Women with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder During Pregnancy, a Retrospective Cohort Study. Okay, so a couple of things in there. This is not prospective. It's not a huge database. It's a retrospective cohort, and it's not all medications. To be very clear, this is just dexamphetamine. So this has nothing to do with Vyvanse. This has nothing to do with Ritalin, even though that medication has been studied in different publications as well. We're going to try to make sense of all of this and put all the little pieces together in a bit, okay? But that's the title of this publication from March the 1st that came out in the Archives of Women's Mental Health. And this is also being picked up on several news sites. It's on MedPage. It's on CNN Health. So it's in different areas of media. And we got to put it in its proper position because while it is very reassuring, we got to, again, say the limitations. This is, number one, this is out of a retrospective study. Two, it's not all the medications. It's just one particular one. Again, dexamphetamine. So there, we can't extrapolate that to all of them. Remember that one of the boxes when we talk about medication safety in pregnancy was physical changes, right? Physical abnormality to the child. In other words, congenital malformations. And this has been all over the place now, we're going to make sense of all of it. Even though there has been some publications, some coming out of the CDC, that have shown, hey, maybe there's these weird little borderline, statistically borderline significant increases for things like gastroschisis. That's weird because that's pretty random. Omphalocele, which is mainly a genetic issue. Weird structural limb issues. And in some studies, maybe some cardiac issues, some septal defects. The problem with those is that while they have shown little increases in bumps, it's hard to stratify for a lot of confounding issues. Remember, these patients are mainly taking this because of impulse disorders, problems. And it's hard to know if there was something else in behavior that affected that. But the good news is, in terms of the congenital anomalies, but yes, I have to be clear, there is some controversial data that gastroschisis maybe, and I mean that like a little tiny bump above baseline, maybe omphalocele, some structural limb issues in this cardiac defect issue we're going to talk about here in a minute. But it's very, very rare, and it's very hard to prove true causation. Okay, so all this shown is, hey, it's an interesting find. But one of these came out from a large review from the National Birth Defects Prevention Study that spanned 1998 to 2011. And this was published actually in 2018 out of the Journal of Attention Disorders. Yeah, that's a journal of attention disorders, February 2018. And it showed, hey, there may be this little slight bump in gastroschisis. It's a little weird, but it's out there and patients need to know that. One of the criticisms of this report, again, from the Journal of Attention Disorders, is that they grouped all the medications kind of into one big pile, all right? So they said any exposure to ADHD medications, again, super helpful. That is good information to have, but the question I would have as a patient is, well, which medication is it? They're not all the same. And that's one of the issues when we read these kind of reports. Since we're talking about malformations, we do have to talk about cardiac issues, because that was in headlines not too many years back because of two main publications, right? One was in 2018 out of JAMA Psychiatry, and then the other was out of a Danish registry that was published in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry in 2021, all right? So JAMA Psychiatry 2018, and then Journal of Clinical Psychiatry 2021. Neither of these is what I'm supposed to be focusing on, but I have to mention this issue about the cardiac issues, because it is kind of concerning. And to be honest, it wasn't all medications. It was mainly one medication, which was methylphenidate. Okay, that's the one that, if there is an issue, it may be that one. But most give a pooled estimate of a relative risk of about 1.28, with a confidence interval of 1 to 1.64. Do y'all get that? So the relative risk, remember, relative risk of 2 is like, basically it's a doubling. It's twice as much. This is 1.28, so it's above 1, it is important, but is it really clinically significant? And that 95% confidence interval, when you take a look at these studies together, really is around 1 to 1.64, meaning that they are borderline statistically significant for cardiac issues. And the kind of cardiac issue, we're not talking about transposition of the great vessels or Epstein's anomaly. Mainly, it's if there is an association, it's with ventricular septal defects, and again, mainly for methylphenidate. So as patients, as we have given that education that, hey, if you're on some kind of medication, especially methylphenidate in the first trimester, one, we want you to be well. We don't want you to have a decompensation. We want you to be mentally fine. Also investigate non-pharmaceutical issues like cognitive behavioral therapy, refocusing and behavioral adaptations. But if you have to, lowest dose that's necessary, and be reassured that any potential association is probably quite small. Let me read you this editorial that came out of of the MGH Center for Women's Health, which is out of Harvard, right? So that's Massachusetts General Hospital, when it's basically doing this editorial on ADHD medications and pregnancy, because they sum up both of these articles very nicely in this little excerpt I'm going to read to you. Here it is. Quote, assuming the relative risk calculated in the studies is correct, the risk for cardiac malformations in the methylphenidate-exposed children would be around 1.63%, a very small increase in absolute risk. And here's the most important part, guys. Here they go. Quote, our primary goal is to maintain mental health stability and functioning during pregnancy, and these studies provide useful information to women taking stimulants who are pregnant or planning to conceive. End quote. So, what's the take-home message? Well, weird stuff has been reported, maybe gastroschisis, maybe on omphalocele. You're like, oh, I don't want any of those. I totally get that. But it's very hard to control everything, and the numbers are not incredibly high. They're very, very gray. And above all, we want patients to be well. Remember, this is not the focus of the episode. We want to talk about perinatal outcomes, the third box. But we have to be complete here. And I wanted to give you those two references. I'll put it on the reference list. JAMA Psychiatry 2018 and then Journal of Clinical Psychiatry 2021 regarding cardiac defects, mainly linked to methylphenidate exposure. Now, because most of these have to do with first trimester use, I do have to say that there is data that pregnancy can affect ADHD. That's why we're talking about this, right? Because the easiest thing to say is, well, just have her stop medications. Wait a minute. It seems to have an estrogen response, okay? Now, in the first trimester when estrogen is kind of, you know, it's trying to establish itself, it's rising, and it's finding its new equilibrium, there can actually be a slight increase in symptoms in ADHD. That's not my anecdotal experience. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what the data says. Then, as the estrogen levels kind of plan out in the second and third trimester, things actually, they do pretty well. Like, I think I don't need my meds. But here's what happens postpartum. This is why it's important. Those patients who have been on this medication, guys, here's a clinical pearl, and that we've stopped them. If we don't restart them on that medication, and of course we have to have the discussion about breastfeeding, which is a whole other issue, there is a higher chance in those patients that they could have kind of rebound depression. Remember that these medications work with dopamine norepi. They're used to a basic level. So when those estrogen levels drop, it seems to aggravate ADHD symptoms in some susceptible patients. Did y'all get that? So it's not that easy. Well, just stop it and you'll be fine. We have to understand that first trimester, they can have an increase in symptoms. Second and third trimester kind of level out. And then postpartum, they can have an exacerbation if they're sensitive to estrogen drops. So what's the take-home message before we leave this box about congenital malformations? It seems to be not that convincing. I mean, there's stuff out there, but it doesn't seem to be much greater over background population. So overall, it is quite reassuring. The goal, of course, is that if they have mild to moderate ADHD, perhaps stopping the medication using non-pharmacological agents to get through the first trimester. They got to get through that first trimester because based on the data, the fluctuating levels of estrogen do affect the condition. So in the first trimester, that seems to be the most aggravation of ADHD if it's going to happen. Second and third trimesters where the estrogen levels are more stable, they seem to be pretty chill. It seems to be okay. And then in the third trimester, when there's that precipitous drop in estrogen, that in those that are very susceptible to ADHD, there seems to be a potential increase in symptoms. And those who stop medication, here it is, guys, have an increased risk, according to the data, of postpartum depression. Y'all, before we leave this box of congenital malformations and just briefly touch on neurodevelopmental outcomes, which again is very reassuring for pregnancies exposed to these medications, I said that those who stop medications and then go postpartum have a higher risk of postpartum depression. Well, that's absolutely true. That was published by Baker et al. In Journal of Attention Disorders in 2022 from January. So not long ago, okay? So Baker et al., Journal of Attention Disorders in 2022. The title of this publication was The Course of ADHD During Pregnancy. And what they showed is that taking it is one thing. Stopping the medication definitely more likely to experience higher levels of postpartum depression. So if they're going to breastfeed, we need to give them that information. Overall, seems to be okay, but it's best for them to avoid postpartum depressive episodes by continuing the medication postpartum. And yes, it is definitely fine to breastfeed with these medications. This is not the same thing like cocaine or something else. So it's based on the data, it seems to be fine that the risk of adverse outcomes in breastfed infants exposed to these medications, if the mother was taking these medications, seems to be very, very minimal if it's used as it should, right? So that's, again, that's not my take on it. That's what the data shows. So really, breastfeeding should not be an issue. But patients need to know, again, as far as we know, it doesn't seem to have any increased risk. But the important message here is that based on the data, if they stop medication postpartum, it may increase the risk of postpartum depression. And that's a big clinical pearl. Everyone, can you believe none of this is what we're supposed to be talking about? But I just can't help it. We've got to cover these three boxes: congenital malformations, neurodevelopmental issues, which I'm going to tell you about right now because that was published just last year. This is recent. That came out in Molecular Psychiatry, February 2023. So basically just 1 year ago. And the title was In Utero Exposure to ADHD Medications and Long-Term Offspring Outcome. That we have to talk about it because this is the second box. And we're going to talk about the third, which is perinatal outcomes. All right. So remember, if somebody asks, is ADHD medication safe? Well, in which box? Birth defects, we've already tackled that. Second is neurodevelopmental or functional issues in the child. And that's easy because the answer is no, it doesn't seem to. And I'll tell you that data in a minute. And then that third box is exactly what we're supposed to be talking about. And I promise we're going to summarize that very quickly because it's very fast. Does that increase the chance of preeclampsia, hypertensive disorders overall, postpartum hemorrhage, NICU admissions, or some kind of fetal distress? And the short answer is, well, no. But again, remember that focus mainly on dexamphetamine. But talking about neurodevelopmental issues, that has been looked at. That was published again in February 2023. And it's very reassuring. Quote, outcomes in children exposed to ADHD medication were compared to outcomes in a control group of 1,270 children whose mothers discontinued ADHD medications prior to pregnancy. After adjusting for potential confounding variables, here it is, the researchers observed no increased risk of any developmental disorders in the exposed compared to unexposed offspring, end quote. That's good news, right? So the hazard ratio was under one. Confidence interval was 0.81 to 1.17. Remember, that crossed one. So it had no clinical or really statistical importance here. Short of it is, they said it seems to be okay. The catch in this publication, just like we've already addressed, is that ADHD medications were considered as a group together. Now, we do have a breakdown of what that included. The majority of the patients used methylphenidate, that's the old Ritalin type. Fewer women used straight amphetamine-based medications, and then others used a different medication like atomoxetine, and then some used clonidine. So they were all grouped together. But still, nonetheless, it's still very reassuring that there was no neural developmental issues identified. But remember, before we leave this, the majority of patients in this group used what? Methylphenidate. We just talked about that before, about the potential link for cardiac issues, which is very weak. So you see, you can't have it all, guys. Y'all get this? See why we're, guys, just to let you know, we put a lot of work into this. There's a lot of data here. And by the time that we're done, I think we would have covered maybe 10 publications. 10 publications that we went through and searched, and then some didn't even make it on the list because it was just duplicated and we're like, or abstracts. We try to stick with, for the majority of cases, published manuscripts. Although when we tell you that it's a supplement or an abstract, I'll tell you when that's the case. But this is a 10 publications that we reviewed for this episode. So methylphenidate, you can't have it all, right? And on the one hand, you're like, I don't know, maybe VSD issues, maybe. But on the other side, well, the majority of patients that were looked at in this publication regarding no neurodevelopmental issues was that same medication, methylphenidate. So not so good on one side and then great on the other side. But even the not so good side is very controversial in terms of cardiac defect. So which ADHD medication is the best? The one that works for the patient. That's the catch, okay? Remember, the goal is first trimester to use minimal medication or other non-stimulant medications if possible, because we got to get her to the second and third trimester where she'll feel better, and then potentially try to start her postpartum so that she doesn't have some kind of relapse or postpartum depression. Oh man, we got to start wrapping this thing up. This has gotten way too voluminous. But do y'all get where we're going? So here's the main take-home messages before we even touch on this new publication. One, ADHD is legit and it's increasing in women, especially those who are reproductive age. Number two, what do we do with medications in pregnancy? Well, data overall is reassuring, although there are different meds and some of the studies don't really tell you which meds they're using, but the data so far seems to be okay. And then number three, watch for this postpartum because they could have, if they've stopped medications, they could have postpartum depression. And that's pretty reproducible in the data. Having said that, now let's finish with this publication. Remember, the title is Investigating Maternal and Neonatal Health Outcomes Associated with Continuing or Stopping Dexamphetamine Treatment for Women with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder During Pregnancy, a Retrospective Cohort Study. So this is not the same medication that we've already been talking about. This is dextroamphetamine or dexamphetamine. So this is only for that class of medication. But still very reassuring. So this is in the third box, which is perinatal outcomes, specifically the things that they were looking at. And remember, this is from Western Australia. They're looking at perinatal outcomes, maternal and child outcomes. Now, interesting, in this publication, women who stopped use of the medication actually had higher odds of threatened abortion or vaginal bleeding prior to 20 weeks compared with those who continued. That odds ratio was 2.28 with a confidence interval of 1.00, right at 1, to 5.15, okay? And the p-value was significant, but it just touched that 1. So that's interesting. So see, this makes the case. Should you stay on or off? Well, according to this, it could potentially increase the risk of threatened abortion, although that mechanism is completely unknown. And if that's even related or just a quinky-dink statistically that they found, who knows? But nonetheless, quote, continuing dexamphetamine throughout pregnancy was not associated with an increase in adverse neonatal and maternal health outcomes compared to ceasing it, end quote. So that's good news. Now, if they did stop the medication, they had the lowest risk, oddly enough, of things like preeclampsia, postpartum hemorrhage, neonatal NICU admission, and fetal distress. But the take-home message was that if they continued the medication, it did not bump that rate up among the baseline. We're getting ready to wrap this up, but remember, while this is basically reassuring, this is only for dexamphetamine. So the question is, did this increase the rate of preeclampsia, hypertensive disorders? And the answer was no, it didn't seem to do that. NICU admission, no, it didn't seem to do that, which again is reassuring, but only for this medication, which was the subject of the paper, dextroamphetamine. Podcast family, you know I can't leave you all without a good controversy, because even though that was good, that's good. I'm going to leave this with you so you can hear. Just chew on this for a bit, all right? Because nothing is free. Dang it. We're going fine. We're riding our bicycle and boom, somebody sticks a stick right in our spoke and derails us of this whole thing. The question is, okay, I get that. That's fine. I get what you looked at. And that's helpful because they looked at, remember, preeclampsia, hypertensive disorders, postpartum hemorrhage, NICU admissions, and fetal distress. Preterm birth? Hello? Well, here it is, guys. I have to be fair, and I want to make sure I include this. There is data, and this was published in BJOG. This was back in May of 2020, not that long ago. The title was Association of Maternal Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder and Preterm Birth. This was a cohort study. This looked at the issue of preterm birth in this population. And what they found was, quote, women with ADHD who had been dispensed ADHD medications at any time, this spanned from 2005 to 2014, quote, had an increased risk of preterm birth, end quote. Those numbers were 7.3 versus 5.8% with an adjusted odds ratio. Here it is, podcast family. Here it is, 1.17. And you're like, oh, what? Well, okay, thankfully it's not five, it's not three, but 1.17 is above one. But once again, the catch is a 95% confidence interval was 1.05 to 1.3. But I'm just being honest. I'm just giving all transparency. There is some data, and this got picked up like, oh my gosh, taking these meds gives you preterm birth. Well, the odds ratio was 1.17. I mean, that's why you got to know what these numbers mean. And what a large clinical significance is, again, clinically and statistically. So that's that. So does it increase risk of preterm birth? Well, it depends on how you read it. Based on this BJOG publication, yeah, but the adjusted odds ratio is just over one. All right, everyone. Boy, did this get away from me. I just wanted to cover one publication, and I lied to you. I said we were gonna do 10 journal review. It actually is 11. We've covered 11 publications in our time together. But just to tell you, this one study again, which is super helpful and it's making its rounds on the media, is a disservice. We got to put it on all of the pictures together. What does it do for congenital malformations? What does it do for neurodevelopmental outcome? What did it do for perinatal outcomes? And now we've kind of grouped everything together. So we need a lot more data. We're not done yet, but it is much better that the patient be emotionally and mentally well during pregnancy rather than really concerned for some things that turn out to be more kind of theoretical risk. Although we have a lot of unknowns. And remember, lowest doses is always best. But if they're going to continue the medication, it seems to be okay. Always best to stop, of course, especially before pregnancy, if they can. But if it's very severe, then at least all of the data that we've covered in our three boxes seems to be reassuring. All right, let's take it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.